From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the first day of February 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll take a look at the cash grain situation at the end of our time together with Greg Johnson of the Andersons. And along the way, we'll hear an update on the inverses in the old and new crop corn and soybeans and what that means for farmers and others trying to price out that new crop with Ed Ossett from the University of Minnesota. And we'll take a look at the weather situation, too, with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, and it happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today finished at $5.49 and a quarter a bushel. It was up 2 1/4. The May up a penny, and the December up 2 1/2. It finished at $4.47 3/4. March beans 4 3/4 higher, $13.65 1/4. The November there up 11 at $11.54. And the bean meal was down 50. The bean oil futures up 35 cents. Wheat futures soft red down 12 at 6.51 in the lead March, and the hard red March at 6.25 1/4, down 12 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead option nearby contract for the afternoon at 114.87 1/2. That was down 17 1/2 cents, and the feeders for the day at 137.92 1/2, 20 higher. Lean hogs 25 cents lower at $69.55. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, to discuss the marketplace for the day. Hey, thanks much for being with us. Volatility is the name of the game in the trade, I guess, over the last week or so. What have you been watching? Well, besides Reddit and GameStop and silver and GMC, or AMC, I'm sorry, not GMC, and AMC, although those seem to be the ones that are getting the most news these days.
Yeah, it's all sectors. It's just not commodities, just not stocks. It's one of these deals where just about every market's going to have some type of news or play in it. But basically, yeah, the silver was the one to take off in the overnight trade. A lot of purchasing taking place there. They said there's a lot of cash silver houses that's sold out of physical silver. But there's a lot of silver in homes and basements and dresser drawers that can come out of the woodwork at some point in time. There is an article floating around on the internet that in past history, anybody's tried to corner or squeeze the commodity market, it does not turn out well. Just the fact that there is some physical delivery process if need be. Then also, too, the exchange could be quick to make sure everything's legit and slow down, a squeeze play. So it'll be interesting. I hope the small guy does have to pay some capital gains when it's all said and done instead of a capital gain loss.
You betcha. Now, on that note, we probably should talk about what's happening in the grains and the oilseeds. There's been a pretty good rally in the marketplace over the last couple of weeks. Again, what do you make of that, and what are producers telling you about their plans for new crop?
Yeah, it's kind of touch and go here, basically, in the overnight and during the day trade here. Corn actually closed a good 10 cents off its low in the March, and it looked like it was going to record a daily reversal down. It made some new highs in overnight in the March up front here. Then traded lower, kind of went through some liquidations of commodity funds. Headed for the sidelines. There was just no big Chinese sales announcement. There was ideas we'd see a 2 million metric ton corn sale. Not to say it can't happen tomorrow, but that kind of disappointed everybody. They feel Chinese business should take place now here fairly quickly because we've got their New Year lunar holiday taking place a week from this next Friday, February 12th. So they'll probably want to get some purchases on the books. Beans took it on the chin. They traded higher than lower. They were not able to come back and finish the day higher in the old crop. New crop was up 11 cents, unwinding of the bull spread, which could be a sign of some caution whenever you see the bull spread give up and the bear spread start to kick in through here. So that's something to keep an eye on. Bean-wise, technically, I take a look at that bean chart. We're 4 1/2 pennant. We're consolidating sideways. There's some ideas. Maybe it is forming a little bit of a head and shoulders top formation in through here. So technically, we could be just correcting, buying some time. But the bottom line on corn and beans particularly, the supply-demand balance sheet's still relatively tight. And the trade's going to be eager to see how many corn and bean acres we pick up going into this spring, because the new crop is going to kind of be the concern, as old crop's fairly well sold out, and as producers start putting together a marketing plan going into 2021, Todd.
I feel as if producers are standing aside of the marketplace at this point, certainly with cash sales for new crop, maybe even for old crop, I suspect, too. Is there anything that they should do to manage their risk, in your opinion?
Oh, you bet. There's some conservative strategies that take place. The thing is, what happens is it's human nature. Whenever you sell something, you see the value of that go up after you sold it. It's kind of frustrating. Same thing if you buy something, you thought you got a good buy, and the value goes down. Well, producers sold out of old crop, and the market moved higher, and that still sets in their mind, I sold maybe too soon. New crop sales are only 5 to 7% complete from the producer's point of view, so therefore they're in a holding pattern. So what do you do here? What do we do here to have some sales on but be able to take advantage of an up move? There's all kinds of complex strategies out there, but we're sticking with the same strategy we have over the years: is to put a price floor in. Get a put option floor under you. That way, if the market rolls over, you got that downside protection. But if it goes up, you can still take advantage of selling your cash grain higher, because we don't know how many bushels you're going to have. We got a lot of weather to go through, but we don't want the apple cart to tip over here and have the thing go backwards on us. We feel we got a good 30 days to get that job done. So sit down for good. One of the good analysts on your program, Todd, a lot of them's got some good ideas on how to put that price floor in to protect your downside, but leave your upside open.
And finally, before I let you go on, I know it's still a bit early for the February WASDE, which is normally a pretty blasé month. Do you expect any fireworks from USDA?
Well, that's a great question. We're still early in the marketing season. There's been a lot of demand take place, and export shipments showed some strong shipments. So the trade's anticipating a little tighter in ending stocks numbers. So that'd be the only thing in here, and I don't know if they got enough ammunition to really reverse that a whole lot. The crop report numbers will be more of a factor as we start looking at new crop acreage and new crop yields and that bottom line on those numbers versus the old crop.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Medium. Find us online at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by grain marketing specialist from the University of Minnesota, Ed Ossett. Thanks, Ed, for being with us today. I take it you've got an article or two that's due out looking at the size of inverses in both the corn and the soybean market, meaning that the nearby months are higher priced than the deferred months. Can you talk to me first a little bit about the explanation of an inverse and then what you're looking at?
Well, that you hit the explanation well, Todd. It's simply, when we say the futures market is inverted, it means nearby contracts are trading higher than deferred. And in this case, I've been looking at recently old crop, new crop inverses. For example, the July corn crop versus December. The July corn futures price versus December corn futures, or the July soybean price, July futures versus the November soybean, old crop and new crop futures. And first of all, it's not a rare thing for an inverse to exist from old to new crop. In fact, probably half the years in the last 40 years, we've had inverses. What is interesting this year is the size of the inverse. If you take a look, for example, at the corn market, I looked at this morning, you've got the old crop July trading at like an 80, 85 cent premium to new crop December. If you look at soybeans, you've got the old crop July trading at a $2 premium to the new crop November. Those are big inverses. That's not your run-of-the-mill 2 cent, 5 cent inverse. Those are big ones, and they go hand in hand with higher prices. And you can look at similar years to that over the last few decades, and it's very interesting to look at that.
Why?
Well, inverses, sharp inverses like that go hand in hand with higher prices. Now, we're early in the year. We're early in the calendar year. And you ask yourself, well, what do higher prices do normally? Well, higher prices probably ration demand, or eventually, if they don't cut demand, they slow down the growth in demand. I know that last week's reports on China buying go contrary to that. But over time, you would expect higher prices to at least slow demand growth. The other side of it is supply. We've got planning decisions to make in the months ahead. Higher prices should encourage more plantings and eventually more supply. So slower demand, higher supply, you can kind of write the end of this story, can't you? And the numbers bear that out. Todd, I've looked at, in the case of corn, 13 years. Where you had a sizable inverse July, December on Feb 1. By the way, it's Feb 1 already. And if you look at those 13 years since 1980, 12 of the 13 years were trading lower at harvest. The only exception was 2012. And of course, 2012 was a drought year. And I think we can all say with certainty, if we're going to have a drought in 2021, prices will go higher.
Are soybeans in the same position?
Yeah, it's a very similar story. Again, I focused on 14 years since 1980 with a strong inverse on February 1. Now, you know, I've eliminated 7 years, other years that were inverted, but you know, the inverse was 2 cents, 5 cents, 12 cents, 18 cents. We're talking about $2 inverse right now from July to November. Now, we've had other years with 50 cents, even a couple with a dollar, upwards of a dollar and a half. But of those 14 years, 12 of the 14 years went lower. The exceptions being 1996. A very good year for demand in soybeans, very tight carryout. And 2003, which some of your listeners may not agree with, but 2003 in the world of soybeans was a drought year. You know, it was the year that it quit raining on August 1. The corn crop was okay, but the soybean crop got hurt. The other 12 years I'm looking at with an inverse like this year went lower from Feb 1 to harvest.
Was there any discernible pattern on how they went lower?
I looked at it. It's never that easy. I will say this. Now I've got people's attention. They're saying, my God, this guy wants you to sell everything now. Well, not necessarily. It's February 1. And this is what I see in those 14 soybean years and 13 corn years. You know, it's really a mixed bag as to when to get it sold. I would say in general, take away the drought year option. Not that that couldn't happen, but take that away and just look at general those years. I'd say, you know, just as often as not, you probably want to wait a few months. I mean, there are examples of an early high early in the year. But more often than not, May, June, early July is a better time.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And by the way, if your listeners have a feeling of dread that, yes, this guy is talking about selling new crop grain, but this is the drought year, well, I suggest you look at options and option strategies that don't lock you in.
And crop insurance at 95% wouldn't be a bad idea either.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Hey, thank you, Ed. Ed Elson is with University of Minnesota, and he is a grain marketing specialist. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse. Thanks so much for being with us today, Mark. I want to check what's happening in Brazil and Argentina from your perspective. It's gotten a whole lot better, though. They're in the middle of the harvest season in parts of South America, and it's been kind of slow so far.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Looking at the situation in South America, yeah, quite a range here, from harvesting taking place in Brazil to still some early crop development for the latest planted crops down in Argentina. At least for the portion of the soybean crop being harvested in Brazil, we don't see any significant issues over the next couple of weeks, while their overall progress is delayed just due to part of that being just the lateness of the crop being planted this year. Still, for the next 2 weeks, for this time of year, we're not seeing any real wet patterns that would really bog things down. The focus of attention right now is, at least for developing crops, is in Argentina, where they got really good rains back late last week, and now going into a window of cooler than normal temperatures, but along with that, a return of drier conditions. So Argentina still is an area still to watch, especially later on in the month where there's some hints of some heat returning. But for the time being, you know, the most stressful conditions here, you know, took place back, you know, in January and even back in December.
Here in the United States, a big storm has swept across the nation from west to east. Tell me a little bit about what happened in California and the Intermountain region as it relates to snowfall here in the Midwest and what the nor'easter looks like.
Yeah, quite an incredible storm here that was still ongoing now in the eastern U.S. But as the storm tracked into California and the western U.S., it produced tremendous precipitation amounts, heavy rainfall in the lower elevations, and then heavy snow in the higher elevations. Portions of the Sierras saw, well, not only their biggest snows of the winter, but in several winters, with totals actually being measured in feet across the Sierras there of Northern California. But even some snow in some of the higher elevations in Southern California as well. And then that extended into the desert, portions of the desert southwest as well. So a big uptick in precipitation, and actually that's helped some of the drought conditions there, but it certainly has not solved that. And actually now that region is going back dry as that's this now storm system tracked into the Midwest and produced the heavy snow here the past couple of days, and now is resulting in a classic nor'easter across the northeast U.S. and up into the Canadian Maritimes.
And as I looked out, I think I saw some really cold temperatures that might be coming next week to portions of the Corn Belt.
Yeah, Todd, we're watching what looks to be a more intense Arctic air mass moving further southeast than how it looked like late last week. And that looks to encompass much of the Corn Belt. Initially over this upcoming weekend and then extending into the early part of next week, kind of next Sunday, Monday looks to be the coldest time frame. And right now it does look like that air mass will produce temperatures dropping below zero as far south as almost to the Ohio River Valley. So coldest air of the winter so far, and something to watch for winter wheat here in the Midwest that will not have any protective snow cover, and for kind of icing up the river transportation system, which could lead to some disruptions in crop harvest, crop logistics.
Yeah, no protective snow cover because the southern part of the state of Illinois didn't get snow this time around. Rainfall, even here where we live in Champaign County, rainfall rather than snow. So thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse in Chicago. We're now joined by Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County to talk about what's up with the cash grain situation. And farmers are thinking a lot of things are going to be up, I guess. I don't know. When you talk to them, are they all feeling like things will still continue to move higher?
It sure feels that way, Todd. We had a 47-cent run-up in corn last week, so their patience was rewarded. We had about a 58-cent run-up in soybeans last week. So farmers continue to comment on how dry it is. Even with the little bit of rain we had over the weekend, we're still on the dry side. We haven't made up for that six-month deficit. The forecast is not, you know, who knows what the forecast will be this spring and summer. So I think farmers, until they have a better handle on the weather, they're content to certainly just wait it out. And so far that patience has been rewarded.
Have they made early sales at all? So in the 5 to 10% level? For corn or beans?
Not really. Maybe a few. I mean, I don't want to say none, but in general, I just think everybody realized they sold too soon last year, and they just don't want to make that same mistake this year. Maybe making a different mistake, but they're certainly not making that same mistake this early. They're going to wait it out and just see either what the weather does or if these prices do work higher. I mean, if we get to $12 beans, for example, I think at some point farmers will start pulling the trigger on new crop sales. But we just haven't hit those levels yet.
What do your cash grain prices look like for the fall? I'm not exactly what they are, but how's the basis holding up and what's it telling you about the old crop, new crop inverse?
Yeah, it's hard to get bids for fall trains this early. Everybody's usually hand-to-mouth. This year, we're seeing a few people, end users, step out for 3 to 4 months buying purchases, but they're not buying new crop. I think everybody there on that end is hoping that we have a normal crop and have adequate supplies by this fall. So we're really not seeing a lot. So we've just got kind of average basis levels out there, 20 to 25 under for corn and beans in the fall. That gets you around 4.25 cash corn. It gets you about around 11 and a quarter cash beans. And like I say, if we could get closer to 12 or get closer to 450, certainly $5, but I don't know that we need to see $5 new crop corn unless we really have weather problems this summer. So yeah, the cash prices are still probably 25 cents below where farmers would really want to step up and pull the trigger, and maybe 50 to 75 cents below where they'd really want to pull the trigger on beans.
And I take it from that discussion, you feel like beans are have more oomph to them than corn for new crop?
Well, we need to get 7 million more acres of beans planted and then have an average yield just to meet the projected demand. So, yeah, I think those are two big hurdles to get over. I'm not saying we can't plant 7 million more acres, and I'm not saying we can't have an average crop, but we don't know the answers to those today. And until we do, it just feels unlikely to me that the market sells off very much until we have a better answer, you know, answer to those two questions.
Hey, thanks so much. And
thank you, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That is Greg Johnson. He's with the Andersons. Joined us here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.